Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
You know, guys, with great podcasts comes great response.
I feel like we are very irresponsible with this podcast.
Yeah.
Ask our listeners who are like, hey, hasn't it been 3 weeks since an episode? I feel like we're very irresponsible with this podcast.
Wildly
it's a great
so.
Podcast, though.
Wildly
so. Or does that mean it's not a great podcast? Good question.
I don't think we ought to pick at that nit. I think we just let go on by. We just let it go. What we can say is that we've been around for, what, over 15 years? I forget where we are, 16 years, something like that.
Yeah, so, something like that.
You know, we should leave it alone. Leave it alone. Longevity, you know, the senility has set in. You know, pretty soon we'll be podcasting from the old folks' home. You know, leave it alone. That's all I said. So I went to the theater yesterday to go see Spider-Man, Brand New Day.
Yes, it is a brand new day for this podcast. It is all Spider-Man, Brand New Day.
I have to say it wasn't until I got home yesterday that I realized that I didn't see any previews. There was nary a preview run. Lots of commercials, nary a preview.
Wow. Yeah, I had a ton of previews at mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I will say, surprised by that.
I saw mine in the Dolby Cinema, which, uh-huh. You know, they are rebranding to Infinity Vision
Avengers
Doomsday comes out, because they can't play in IMAX because Dune got the exclusive on the IMAX.
Well, because Marvel slept on that, yeah.
Yep, masses. Yeah. They thought Dune would choke.
Yep,
and they didn't, and they got the IMAX. So now they have Infinity Vision. So
Denis Villeneuve ain't scared.
Nope.
Yeah.
So I saw, you know, I saw Spider-Man: Brand New Day in Infinity Vision, essentially, and did not actually see a Doomsday trailer. I was like, that feels weird.
I didn't see a Doomsday trailer. I saw a new Jumanji trailer, though.
I did see a new Jumanji trailer. You know, it's kind of funny. I didn't see a single comic book-based trailer, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I didn't either. They were all other movies.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about something in theater experience thing before we start talking about the movie.
Oh, shit.
So I'm looking, I go up beforehand to buy drinks and things, and I look at all of these popcorn buckets they have now and all of the collectibles, because this has become a thing where they have, instead of just the big movies, they seem to have them for just about every movie. And I'm looking at these things, and there is for Mandalorian and Grogu, the giant AT Walker with the Mandalorian on the side. And then I see one that puts that to shame in size. For the Odyssey, they have a giant Trojan horse that is up on its hind legs, and the stomach opens out for the popcorn.
Yes.
For Spider-Man, they have life-size hand with the webbing coming out, and the hand is the cup for your drink, and the webbing bowl is for the popcorn. And I'm looking at these things, and it's like, who has space to display these and store them? Because like I've done a few. Like I did the crypto holding the popcorn bag, and that's about the right size for a shelf, but this Odyssey one is like nearly 2 feet tall. It's ridiculous.
You know what I've discovered in my old age, Wayne?
What's that?
Is that any geek with the disposable income to buy a Trojan horse-shaped popcorn bucket does not actually have the space for it. They are buying that to put it in a box in their basement or their attic.
Yeah, well, they don't have the money for the space because they've spent that money on a Trojan horse popcorn bucket.
So, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Well,
this thing is like $60, and
but it comes with a large popcorn.
Yeah, it does. But these are not collector quality items most of the time. Like, it's not a really nice statue you're going to put up. I mean, they look great, but they're plastic.
Yeah, well, it's on a shelf. As long as no one touches it, they can't tell. You know, my disappointment with the whole popcorn bucket situation is that, like, I see all these popcorn buckets. A Trojan horse. The Odyssey also had, in addition to a Trojan horse, they had an IMAX camera popcorn bucket. Like, all these imaginative buckets. And then I go see Spider-Man Brand New Day, and it's literally Spider-Man's head. And I'm like, huh, that feels lazy.
Yeah, no, so the one at my theater, it was original. Like I said, I love the idea that it is both a cup and a popcorn bucket all in one, and it's a full size his hand with the webbing bowl.
That's cool.
It was really cool, and I have nowhere to put it. I did not buy it.
You know, I did not buy a popcorn bucket yesterday, but I did buy a popcorn, and par for the course, some of the worst popcorn I've ever had. It was stale.
Aaron, what movie theater did you see this at? Did you see this movie theater at Joe's Cinema? Like, no trailers, bad popcorn.
I went to the Studio Movie Grill, and which is a very comfortable, nice, newish theater. And I did not care for the popcorn. It's one of those places I usually order lunch when I go, but it was 10 a.m., so I'm like, I'll just get popcorn and a Diet Coke. But, of course, they don't serve Coke products there, so I had to get a Diet Dr. Pepper. Diet Pepsi is disgusting. And I got the popcorn, and I'm convinced it was last night's popcorn. You know, the 10 a.m. show was the first show of the day. Yeah, I am convinced. Yeah, I think it was last night's popcorn, and it was nasty. And so large Diet Dr. Pepper, large popcorn, $20. And then they had the temerity to just go ahead and bake the tip in. And that drives me crazy.
Movie grills. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That just makes me nuts. And then they have a line for additional tip. And I'm like, fuck you, additional tip. You know, if you're going to include the tip in, that's what you get. You know,
the funny thing is at this point, as ridiculous as their prices are, when you say it's like $20 for a popcorn and soda, my first thought was, hey, that's probably cheaper than at my theater.
Ugh, that's just nuts. The cost of dining in or having a concession at the movie theater is just, it's always been ridiculous, but even.
Don't you love this old guy talk? old guy screaming at the sky talk.
The thing that makes me mad about the concession stand prices is the reason why they're so expensive is that the movie theaters get so little of the ticket price. And I just wish that things were priced appropriately. Make the ticket price more expensive. Reduce the cost of the concession. It just seems ridiculous that I can buy a box of popcorn, you know, to pop in my microwave and make a better bag of popcorn than what I get at the movie theater and spend substantially less. You know, I mean, I can spend, $6 for a box of popcorn at the grocery store, giving me 20 bags of popcorn to pop.
It's got to hide it under your shirt, Aaron.
Yeah. And I hate being that guy who's going to smuggle stuff into the movie theater. But golly, it's just ridiculous. So.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, I will tell you, I have been, you know, I've been trying to lose a few pounds. But when I saw Spider-Man, I'm like, frick it. I'm going to get a large popcorn. I ate so much popcorn yesterday, guys. I was embarrassed. I was sick of myself. I was halfway done with that popcorn before the damn movie started. Because, you know, at an AMC cinema, you get the 30 minutes of trailers and commercials.
Right.
Before the 2.5 hour Spider-Man movie. So, like, I was just, like, scarfing that popcorn like it was the last meal I was going to have. There was a thin layer of popcorn on the bottom. Because I'm like, oh, I don't want to finish this whole thing. Like five popcorns on the bottom of that bucket, you know. But so we have all now experienced the brand new day of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tom Holland. You know, you've got Punisher. You've got the Hulk. You've got an additional character that we're going to spoil on this podcast. So if you haven't seen the movie and you don't want to know who Sadie Sink is playing, even though you probably already know, you can turn away now. But we're going to talk about it. Let's chat. I have many thoughts on Spider-Man Brand New Day.
Well, in preparation for Brand New Day, I rewatched the previous three Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. And, you know, I have watched the Homecoming and No Way Home. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Homecoming, No Way Home.
Well, there was Homecoming, Far From Home, and No Way Home.
Far From Home. Okay. So the first two I've watched several times. I don't think I had rewatched No Way Home, the third one, since I saw it in the movie theater. So I think I'd only seen that the one time. And so had completely forgot that May died. At the end of that.
I don't know how you forget that. That's like a major part of the movie.
Completely had forgotten that. The movie didn't really land on me much at the moment I saw it. Liked it a whole lot better when I watched it this additional time. But I
will tell you, and Aaron, just to give you a little bit of grace, I can understand. Not that I forgot that May died, but I feel like I'm going to say something similar about this movie. These last few Spider-Man movies, probably the last two, between No Way Home and this one, they're so overstuffed that even important story beats, if in the end, you know, by the end, you don't remember every story beat, even the major ones.
Yes.
Yeah. Because, like, I will tell you, in 5 years' time, I'm going to forget that Hulk was in this
movie. Yeah.
Because that wasn't really the point of the story, right?
Right.
Much like May dying, that wasn't really, like, the last hour of the film are about something else.
Well, and yep. and that'll be, that's part of my feedback on this movie. Now, let me just straight up say, I loved this movie. I thought yes. of the four Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, this is probably my favorite. I will say that I think the reason why it might be my favorite is because of prior movies this week. You know, I was just really in a Spider-Man-y sort of mood, and it really scratched. But that said, there was, you know, before we jumped into the last part of the movie that's really Sadie Sink focused, I thought the movie was over. I mean, it felt like I hadn't looked at my watch, but I was like, oh, wow, this movie went by really fast. And then, oh, yeah, no, not over.
No, there's a whole hour left.
Yeah. And so I was a little surprised by that. But I got to say, I very much enjoyed this movie. I think that it was very successful in what it set out to do. And I think it's already proven that it's going to make lots and lots of money because, you know, it out earned the entire run of Supergirl in its first Thursday showing. You know, first day of showing on a Thursday, $72-75 million, I think. You know, so outgrossing Supergirl's entire theatrical run, which, yeah. by the way, Supergirl now available to stream digitally. I thought it was highly enjoyable. I thought they got a lot right, and I think my favorite thing about this movie, and I think one of the reasons again why I responded so well to it, is that Spider-Man spends most of his time in his mask. And mm-hmm. I stinking love that. It drives me crazy in all of these superhero movies that the masked hero is wandering around without his mask most of the time because, you know, they've got the movie star and they want to show their face. But because it's such a huge story element that, you know, Spider-Man has a secret identity, you know, that's what the entire third movie was about. They do everything they can in the story to preserve it. And so I thought it worked so well having him in the mask. I'm like, that's how you do it. You know, because every time he's in the mask, it's still interesting. You know, you're not going, I'm not getting any expression from this guy. But, you know, they engineered that mask to, you know, show expression with the eyes. I love it. I thought it was so well done.
Yeah, so you mentioned how much it made. It's already made $168 million, not including Sunday.
Yeah.
So it is going to do incredibly well.
It's
going to
make $1 billion easy. I think it's going to make $1 billion.
It's going to be one of the biggest movies of all time, which is kind of crazy. But, you know, I'm happy, you know, because it is a great film. I have, you know, I kind of want to touch base on, you know, how Spider-Man spends most of the movie in mask, which I thought, to your point, I appreciated. So I have major positives about this film and major negatives, but overall, I still thought it was a fantastic movie. It is probably my favorite Tom Holland Spider-Man movie. But there's one point that it's neither a positive or a negative, but I found it funny, which is that, you know, you mentioned how the movie, you know, Spider-Man spends most of the movie in his mask, which is great. This is also very street, you know, even though there are big cinematic, you know, battles and things that happen. Like, largely, there's no giant hole in the sky. The world isn't at stake. You know, this is largely, you know, in the context of these characters.
It's not big potato stuff. It's little potato stuff.
It's little potato stuff. However, speaking of little potatoes, I found it hilarious a number of times in this movie that Spider-Man would swing to a location, land on the sidewalk, and just walk through the front door. I'm like, that feels a little, like, normal to me. Like, I got to the location. I'm walking up the street. I'm just going to walk through the door. I'm going to take the elevator. I'm going to walk through the security. You know, I'm like, okay. That just, like, he's just, like, randomly, like, walking up to things. I'm like, it just felt like at one point he's walking down the street with the cops. And I'm like, this is a different kind of Spider-Man than I've seen in movies for a while. Yeah. Like, usually he swings to the window and he stays mysterious. But, like, in this one, he's just kind of, like, out there, like, hey, cops.
It really stood out. And a lot of things like that, I put towards this movie did an incredible job of world building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the fact that he can do that versus previous movies where he wasn't so accepted, that's a big part of it, is that that little thing like that does world building. The scenes in the beginning, I was concerned when I found out how many villains were going to be in this movie, but most of them come during like a montage,
yeah,
where you see what's happened over the last 4 years. I loved it because, no, I won't remember most of those in the long term, but it made this world feel lived in. He hasn't been stagnant. Like, a lot of movies for superheroes feel like nothing happens between the movies. And this, it wasn't like that. This is a active world where he's been doing a lot. He's been dealing with supervillains, not just regular people. And it felt like a fully lived-in world that we're just zooming in on one story of. I really appreciated that. I thought world building was absolutely incredible in this movie.
I completely agree. I love that we got to see Tombstone. Obviously, we got to see more of Scorpion than Tombstone, but you know, I just got such a kick out of that.
Boomerang was in it.
Uh huh. Yeah. I mean, just good stuff. Good stuff. Well, and Gene DeWolf.
Which was actually something I was going to comment on, Aaron. I'm glad you brought up Gene DeWolf.
Yeah. Go, Paul. Go.
So Gene DeWolf is played by an actress named, I don't know if it's Liza or Lisa, Colon Zayas. She is from the TV show The Bear. She's most well known from the TV show The Bear. She's also married to an actor who I've been a fan of for years and years and years, David Zayas. He's a Puerto Rican actor. He's from New York. He played Angel in Dexter. For all 8 seasons of Dexter. He's been in a bunch of stuff. Really just a big fan of his for years. And so, you know, so when was it earlier this year? Earlier this year, I went to New York to see Dog Day Afternoon on Broadway. And I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but they did a reproduction of, or, you know, they did a play of Dog Day Afternoon, the old Al Pacino movie, on Broadway with John Bernthal in the lead role, played by Al Pacino in the movie, and it also featured Eben Moss Bachrach, you know, as in the play, as the two leads. And so, you know, the Punisher and the Thing are basically in a Broadway show together. And I actually met both David Zayas and Lisa Colon Zayas in the audience because they were there, because they both actors are also in The Bear. So they were supporting, you know, everyone on Broadway. So it was kind of cool because I met her in the show, and little did I know that I met Gene DeWolf. I would have taken a picture.
I absolutely loved her in this movie, though.
She was great. Yeah, she was great. Yeah.
She was an incredible addition because they needed a character that could talk to Spider-Man and know Spider-Man, but not Peter.
Right.
And she really served that, but she was also the character that could give him advice. And like, I always liked her in the comics too.
So. Oh yeah. Me too. Yeah. But did you immediately have that dread? Like, oh my God, are we going to tell a death of Gene DeWolf story here?
I did.
Next movie.
Yeah.
Maybe next movie. You know, I thought this movie was great. You know, I think a couple of points that I would like to make about it is I felt like I watched 3 episodes of a TV show. Not in a bad, like it was a movie.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it was a big budget movie, but with 3 distinct acts. The first act, you know, with the whole like Spider-Man, Gene DeWolf, cop stuff. You know, he starts mutating a bit like that. That was largely the first act. Then you have the second act, which is your Hulk act, and then you have the third act, which is, you know, Jean Grey on the island, and it is very much almost like 3 separate episodes of a TV series that still tell one overall story, but have 3 distinct chapters. For me, I felt disappointed in a couple of things, I felt disappointed in 2 major things. One, the Hulk in the second act. I really felt like that was not the best use of the Hulk.
I don't know. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed everything about Mark Ruffalo and the appearance of the Hulk.
I
just
felt like it was such a, like, I don't know. It felt like a, I mean, I felt like I've seen that story of, like, Hulk feeling guilty, you know, Hulk, like, at what point do we have a Hulk who can control himself in the MCU? Like, I feel like we already had Hulk, you know, kind of get to a place where he was good with his stuff. And now we're back him not.
I feel like he still was. It's just that, you know, it had been so long since he had lost control. And the fact that Jean Grey had manipulated him so that he would lose control, you know, brought him. He's always going to have that fear, like, you know, the Hulk gets loose and I don't have control. because somebody else was at the steering wheel, right?
Yeah.
And so I completely bought into that story and felt like it was appropriate, and really am curious as to where that leaves his character for Endgame.
Yeah, and I'll add to that of the Hulk personality hasn't been out in a long time.
Yeah.
They did kind of that merging thing.
Right.
And he was Professor Hulk for a long time. And it was very obvious once he started using the that bracelet thing that he was suppressing that Hulk personality. Of course, when Hulk comes out, he's going to lash out.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Well, and I love I love the line that Peter has. I didn't know you could get that. You know, I'm just like, yeah, he don't get hit. You know, I mean, it was great. I was very pleased to see the Hulk be Hulk.
Yeah,
it's been frustrating since not Endgame, but what was the Avengers movie prior to that where he was scared the whole time?
Oh, Infinity War.
Infinity War. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, and I personally enjoyed seeing Banner as a mentor.
Yeah,
like of all the people that would mentor Peter Parker, Banner is perfect.
Yeah,
I thought he was a great fit for the role. What I found interesting from a movie like title standpoint, they called this Brand New Day. I didn't see anything in the story that was Brand New Day's story. It was a lot of the story was the story of the other.
Right.
I have, you know, so, I mean, I hear your thoughts on the Hulk. You know, I don't know. So I struggled a little bit with that, but my other struggle was the Punisher, guys.
Oh, I love the Punisher.
Let me say.
This is the part of the podcast where Paul tells us why he's wrong.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I want to clarify. I did enjoy the Punisher very much in this movie. What I didn't enjoy is that they spent a long time in interviews leading up to this movie saying, this Punisher feels like the natural progression of the Punisher after you see him in the Punisher One Last Kill. We wanted to make sure to honor the Punisher that you see in the Netflix, or the Disney Plus shows. Like, this is the same Punisher. He won't feel any different. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know that I saw the Punisher crying and smiling and joking and laughing and putting on a Spider-Man mask and dancing
and seeming like a human being you wouldn't mind being in the same room with.
Yeah. You know? So I'm like, okay, a little bit of misadvertising there. But that being said, this is largely the type of Punisher I would expect to see in a Spider-Man comic.
Yeah. I thought John Barenthal was great in this movie. Every performance. There is not a single performance in this movie that I have a complaint about.
No,
the only thing that I'll say about the performances is that I don't get Zendaya, whatever her name is.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that she's a huge megastar and the, you know, Gen Zs are all really respond to her, and that you put Zendaya up there on the marquee, people are going to show up. I understand that, you know, she is make or break for box office. I don't get it. Doesn't matter. She's still great on screen, but I don't understand why she's a superstar.
I don't know where she exactly started, and that's on me. You know, I'm probably a little bit too old, but you know, I think she did, like you said, I think she did a good job in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know that I see a lot of chemistry between her and Tom Holland's Spider-Man, but I do see a lot of chemistry between her and Ned. And the romance that I thought for sure was going to reveal itself wasn't MJ and Flash. I thought it would be MJ and Ned, because why would, right?
Because Ned is sexy as fuck.
Oh, my God. You know he's bringing it, you know?
Well, and so that wasn't Flash that she was smooching. That was some guy named Nick.
Flash. No, oh, okay. Some guy named Nick. Flash.
Well, and I will say, big miss not calling the guy Paul, given the whole comic book Paul situation, right?
Yeah, I expected him to be named Paul.
Yeah, but just like in the comic book, and everyone would hate him.
Yeah, I appreciate that Zendaya and Ned are just friends, because it definitely felt like they were going a romance develop, but. Mm-hmm. That they could actually just be friends, I really appreciate it.
Well, I loved that they found a place for Marissa Tomei in the story and found a meaningful place for her in the story. I really liked the place that she occupied. And I was, you know, Marissa Tomei is a joyful actress. I love seeing her on screen. clearly I had suppressed the knowledge that she died in the third movie. So it was nice to see her.
My only issue with her scene was they came so close to the line, but didn't have her say, "With great power comes great responsibility." So close to it. I wanted that line to be in the movie.
I think it's a marvelous film.
Agreed.
I think that I'm interested to see what they do with Sadie Sink going forward. You know, understanding that she'll be in the X-Men, whatever that winds up looking like.
I don't know if she's going to be in Doomsday or probably Secret Wars, even though if you think of, I mean, if those are largely inspired by the comics, there wasn't a ton of X-Men featured in those stories, if I remember correctly.
Honestly, I don't expect that we're going to see her again.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see her until X-Men.
I have a feeling we may not even see her then, because what I expect is after Secret Wars, they're going to fold things in and we're going to get I don't know that we're going to get a new X-Men team. I think we're going to get some of the older ones.
No, I think I don't think you hire Sadie Sink and not plan use for, again. For yeah, not use her again.
I think this movie is going to make so much money that anybody attached to it's going to find their way into it.
Yeah. And hey, good on John Bernthal finally, you know, like being in, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's been in major movies before, but like a freaking, like bringing Punisher to the big screen. And I know that was largely, you know, not to take away anything from Bernthal. I know that was largely Tom Holland that happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they're friends in real life. And let's acknowledge, you can see their friendship on screen. Absolutely. They are clearly, they've got chemistry. The chemistry that I feel like Zendaya and Tom Holland don't really
literally
have.
The people who are married.
But he and Bernthal, their friendship is tangible on screen. The scene with them in the hospital is just very enjoyable. The scene with them, you know, go kick rocks, kid. I thought it was very memorable. And I think John Bernthal's a magnificent performer. And we talked about this with the Punisher one shot episode they did. I don't think he's a very good writer, you know, at least wasn't in that episode. And, you know, he needs somebody else writing for him. And fortunately, he did here. And, you know, he had really good material to work with.
And I love seeing him work. And even, you know, I know it sounds like a complaint that it's not the same Punisher we see represented in the Marvel show, or excuse me, the Disney Plus shows. But I will say my complaint is more the discrepancy but not so much the actual representation of it, because I actually enjoyed this Punisher quite a bit.
Yeah,
I would like to see more of this Punisher and a little less of the One Last Kill Punisher.
I love him here. I haven't seen One Last Kill, and I was curious if they had made him more like this for One Last Kill.
No, and they like leaned so hardcore into the trauma in that one.
He was just a crazy murder machine. Yeah. He was a crazy murder machine in One Last Kill.
Yeah,
the only thing that was enjoyable about One Last Kill was the performance of the bad guy in that.
Judith Light.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I highly recommend Spider-Man Brand New Day.
Yeah, it is.
You don't need to hang around for end credits. Huge waste of time.
You know, and so, you know, so Jen did not enjoy this movie. She does enjoy some superhero movies, but she did not enjoy this one. And I get it. Hey, it's not her jam. Sometimes things get a little too comic booky for her, and it's not her jam. She still went. I appreciated it. But, you know, she also dozed off a few times in the movie, so I could tell. And it, like, we got like to your point where we got 2/3 into the movie and everyone thought it was done. When she realized it wasn't, I could tell the panic was setting in. So you know, we saw it in
one
of those.
She was already planning lunch. She was ready to get out. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like me the first time I saw Avatar, and I realized this was a 3-hour movie. But, you know, the credits start rolling, and you know, we're in those reclining seats, and she presses the button that the recliner starts going down. I'm like, I don't know why you're getting ready. She's like, but you're lucky. I love you. She's like, I have to sit through these goddamn credits, see whatever the hell is after these credits. And then when the scene at the end of the credits was so useless,
training my wife on Marvel movie end credit scenes has worked against me, because when I took her to go see The Sheep Detective, the credits start rolling and I'm getting ready to get up and leave. And she goes, let's stay through the end of the credits. I'm like, why? She goes, there could be a scene. I don't think The Sheep Detective is going to have an end credit scene, Suzanne. She goes, let's just stay through the end of the credits. I'm like, okay.
Did it have a scene error?
It did not.
if it's not a Marvel movie, the first thing I'm doing when the movie's over is I look up on my phone end credit scene for that movie.
Yeah.
After credits stop, check it out.
Yeah. I'm not staying if there's not one. But I have to say, for this one, this was easily my favorite of the Tom Holland movies. Mm-hmm. I am not a huge fan of the first two Tom Holland movies.
Same.
And my big issue with it was, in the Avengers movies, they let Spider-Man be awesome. And he is a character that rises to the occasion, things like that. I felt like in the very first two of the Spider-Man movies, they made him weak. He was a weak character that couldn't handle fights on his own, constantly needed help, and just they did not let him be awesome in any way. I don't think they had that issue with the third one. I mean, they did give him help in the form of two other Spider-Men, but I did think they started letting him be awesome. This movie, they let him be amazing. Like, in the fight scenes, he is dominant when he's fighting anyone that doesn't have powers. He's, you know, strong when he has powers. They're letting the spider sense really come out and work. And he is an impressive superhero that, you know, intelligent, kicks ass, and just, I really appreciate that out of my Spider-Man.
I believe that's not a spider sense, but rather a Peter Tingle.
They thankfully did not call it that even once in the movie.
They did call it his tingle, but they didn't call it a Peter Tingle. One last thing I want to mention. No one else has brought this up, but I think it's important that we acknowledge that Florence Pugh is a freaking goddess.
Oh, yes.
And there was a moment in the bathhouse scene that I thought for sure we were going to get a Florence Pugh rear end shot. I was just like, are they going to do that? Are we going to see Florence Pugh's bottom? Because, okay. You know, there was a moment also that I thought we were going to see Peter Parker's bare naked butt, but he wore his Peter's underwear. Tingle. And yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So when you said the name, I had no idea who Yolanda.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the Black Widow.
The White Widow. Yeah, Black Widow. I don't know.
She's the Black Widow now.
Black Widow.
She's okay. Black Widow now. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But
yeah, no, she's fantastic. I love Florence Pugh. So
same.
It was awesome to see her in the movie.
I you know, I'm not really much of a red carpet guy, but you know, at the premiere they had a lot of images of her up, and I'm like, oh my word, she is just a lovely. Wow. But yeah, dirty old man. That's right. Me.
Well, we're gonna leave Aaron alone for a few minutes.
And we're gonna go spend some time
in the bathhouse.
hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week in the pages of Batman number 12, we get the debut of Verity Pennyworth, Alfred Pennyworth's, I believe, niece, and Batman's new butler. She debuted at the end of last issue, and we finally get to learn more about her in the pages of Batman number 12. We also get the latest issue of Absolute Superman number 22. And from Image Comics, we get Mask number 3. The action-packed Energon Universe series continues. That and more.
Very exciting. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about Spider-Man Brand New Day. Let us know your thoughts about Florence Pugh. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments, could win a coveted valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
Please don't let us know your thoughts about Florence Pugh.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
You know, I feel like that sort of response was engineered into the movie. They want to hear about our thoughts on Florence Pugh in the bathtub. That's what they want. That's
oh, yeah,
want.
I'm sure.
Yeah, they're off this. Yeah.
That's right. All right, guys. Well, you know, there's lots of good movies coming out in August. I'm excited that we're not moving into the dog days of summer at the movie theaters. There's still good stuff, like The End of Oak Street comes out next month.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to that.
Same here. So, all right. Well, good chatting with you guys. We will talk to you all again next week.
See you next time.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.